Chapter 13. A patch of blood decorates the stone wall of her cell. It's dry now. Dry for days, maybe. And once Mercurial catches sight of her, it's easy enough to see what happened. She fought back, and Nima's blank-eyed slave boys roughed her up. The side of the Zabrak's head is scuffed raw and scabbed over. Her hair, normally thrust up like the feathers of a proud bird, flops over that side of her head, matted there with blood. The blood's dried in purple streaks down the deep sea blue of her skin, forming new tattoos all the way to her jawline, framing that famously vicious grimace of hers.
Jazimori, you are mine.
He doesn't bother greeting her. No words. Just a smile. Big and beaming. It's enough to show her.
I'm the one who caught you, little fish.
She thought she outsmarted him back on Terrace. And, he admits, she did. But it was only a temporary embarrassment. A failed move in a bigger game. A game he just won. He nods to Nima's freaks. They murmur and mumble as three of them storm into her cell, looping rope. Rope, of all the primitive things, around her wrists and dragging her out. Mercurial is glad to have Nima's hospitality, and he's just as glad the hut isn't here. He doesn't know Nima, but he knows huts. They're given over equally to brutality and formality, and he has no time for either of those things. Plus, they're disgusting. Giant slime-lubed parasites drinking from the blood flow of the universe. Mercurial has little issue with parasites, given that he is one himself. But the slime? Ugh, that he can do without. Haughtily, Mercurial leads the way. The hut slaves drag Jazz behind them, and she struggles to keep up. The bounty hunter is buoyant with triumph. He feels a spring in his step.
This is going to be a good day.
Her capture was easy. He thought he'd have a long hunt ahead of him, so he hired a whole crew to help. And then the girl just drops into his lap? An easy win. One that still required him to be in the right place at the right time, of course. He deserves it. He deserves the payment, too. But does his crew? Maybe he won't pay the crew after all. A few credits to get them on their way. Or maybe no credits at all. After all, what work did they do? It darkens his feeling of victory a little, having to share the cut with those old knobs. It would be much better to keep it all, especially since they did literally nothing except come along for the ride. He ponders this as they walk down the smooth stone passageways of Nima's cavernous temple. In this, she's quite unlike the other huts he's known. They favor opulence and amusement. Jabba's palace on Tatooine was positively baroque. This, though, is about as spare as they come. It's just boreholes and tunnels sculpted out of the fire-red stone. The tunnels are smooth in some places, scalloped in others. And he doesn't know if they're natural to the landscape, or if the hut chewed or somehow secreted her way through the rock. Stranger still, there's almost nothing powered here. Minimal electricity. No droids that he's seen. Even Amari is bound with rope. Not chain, not shackles, not cuffs. Common rope. They pass by more cells. In one of them, the hut slaves hold a man down, carving off hanks of the old spacer's hair. The man screams as they shear him down to the skin. The freak stuffs something in his mouth, a dirty rag. One of them sticks a needle in the corner of his eye. His screams dissolve into mushy murmurs behind the gag. A puff of coppery dust, and they begin to paint the man's face red.
They're making more of themselves, Swift thinks.
Nima enslaves her acolytes, And in turn, they make more acolytes. Like a spreading disease. He keeps moving, putting forth a brisker pace. The sooner he can be done with this, the better. His ship, a Corellian shuttle, awaits. Still, something nags at him. His good feeling is eroding fast. He also doesn't like that Amari hasn't said a word. She's keeping her mouth shut. And while that should please him, it doesn't, because it means she's not giving him any satisfaction at all. And Mercurial demands satisfaction. The bounty hunter tells himself he's not going to say a word either. And next thing he knows, he just can't help himself. He keeps walking, facing forward, as the words tumble out of him.
I don't think you appreciate the trouble you're in, Amari. And I don't think you get that I'm the one standing between you and Boss Gyuti, taking your head as a trophy. So now's the time.
He grins, flippant. He makes a lasso gesture with his finger above his head.
You want to beg? Beg. Plead if you can. Cut me a deal. Come on, Amari. You're a bounty hunter. You know the art of the swindle? Unless you just want me and my crew to bring you in. And yet, nothing.
So disappointing. He stops suddenly and rounds on her.
The bounty is for you alive or dead, Amari. And I'm happy to take your head.
Wait. What are you doing? Her hands, bound in front of her, hang in front of her mouth. Her cheeks bulge until they don't. A slick string of saliva connects her lower lip to her knuckles. Her eyes flash with mischief. Mercurial only realizes what's happening when it's far too late. Jazz tilts her head, and the hair upon her scalp flips from one side to the other. When it does, it reveals the topography of her skull. And gone from that side of her head are her spikes. Three of them, broken off. The nubs puckered with dry blood.
Where that?
Oh. Oh no. The spikes are in her hand. Swift staggers backward, heels scuffing stone as he reaches for the batons that hang at his side. Amari's hand forms a fist around the spikes as she moves forward fast. Too fast. And already those bony thorns are thrust up through the gaps in that fist, sandwiched between squeezed fingers. His fingers find one of his batons. Slow. Too slow. The hut slaves don't even know what's happening. Her fist flashes in front of his face. Three spikes slash, drawing sharp lines from his chin all the way up to his brow. Pain throbs. All he sees is red. He whips out the baton, but his fingers fumble, and it drops. Swift trips over his own foot. His shoulder slams hard into the wall as he falls. Above him, he sees the blurry image of Jazz Amari vaulting over him. With a pivot twist of her wrist, she uses the rope to yank two of the hut slaves with her. And both of those freaks collapse into Swift, just as he tries once more to stand. Her knee connects with one of their heads, and that head slams into the bridge of Mercurial's nose with a dull pop. Behind his eyes, he sees hyperspace streaks. He roars with rage. When next he opens his eyes, he sees Jazz stab out with a high kick, taking out the last hut slave. The neck snaps. The slave drops. Jazz Amari backpedals, sawing at the rope with her own horns.
Amari!
He growls, trying to stand. She cuts through the rope.
Please don't hurt me, Mercurial. Please don't take me to Boss Gyuti.
She makes a gesture at him with her free hands, the backs of each finger swiped along her cheeks as her upper lip twists into a sneer. He assumes it's a rude gesture. Then she finds one of the bolt holes leading up through the hut's temple. She clambers her way up through the space and is gone. Her head hurts. Bad. The horns on her head are bone. breaking them off meant breaking her bones. Slamming the side of her skull against the unforgiving stone wall of her cell and snapping them off one by one was no easy feat. After each attempt, she had to sit. She tried not to throw up. Once she passed out, and then it was back up at it again. Wham! 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 Blood slicking the wall, her brain doing dizzy loops, until she had three of her thorn-like horns in the flat of her palm. Three keys. She'd had one actual key hidden there, a lockpick concealed in a fake horn, but the hut slaves found it and took it away, which left her with one choice: break off the horns. They were her way out, and she needs it too, quick as anything, because this vicious diversion paid an unexpected bounty. She knows where Ray Sloane is. She saw her, here in the temple, working with Nima the Hutt, going together on some kind of expedition. She has to get back to Nora, and fast. She had no idea who was coming for her, but it being mercurial both pleases her greatly and worries her deeply. Swift is no fool, and he said something about bringing a crew. Him? Working with a team? Mercurial doesn't play well with others.
These are strange days indeed.
Whoever they are, they're now a part of her plan. They came here somehow. A ship, she assumes, if he has a crew with him. And if he has a ship, then that ship has clearance codes. Clearance codes mean they can take to the air, and the Empire won't shoot them down on sight. It won't be an advantage they can use forever, but it's something. First, though, she has to get to that ship. And then she has to take it. The tunnels here in Nima's temple are a worm-eaten labyrinth. She thinks she's headed in the right direction, but suddenly the tunnel curves back on itself and goes the other way. Most of the tunnels look the same. Every time she believes she's figured it out, the tunnels prove her wrong. And she worries suddenly that she's going over the same area again and again. Is this mark a scuff mark from her boot? Fear assails her.
I could die in here. I could get lost and starve to death.
Or they'll come for her. She stops crawling and takes a moment just to listen, turning her ear to the tunnel ahead. Sounds. Scraping. Murmuring. Coming closer. Jazz hunkers down and lies in wait as the sounds grow louder. It's them. Nima's mind-wiped acolytes. Can they smell her? Do the hut slaves know their way through this maze? From an intersecting tunnel, one appears. Pale face, sharpened teeth. The slave's mouth widens in alarm, mad eyes flickering, and he comes at her fast, scurrying like an animal, teeth snapping at the air. Clack, clack, clack. She kicks out with a boot, catching him in the mouth. Teeth shatter, and her foe gags on them. A little voice inside her says,
"He's a slave. He doesn't know what he's doing. Don't kill him."
But it's too late for him. There's nothing there. No mind, no rational thought, just pure feral zeal. Jazz has to do what she's gotta do. But even taking that time to worry about it distracts her. Hands come at her from behind. They close around her throat and drag her backward. The back of her skull slams into the stone. Nausea rises in her, threatening to take her insides and send them outside, nearly overwhelming her as the second hut slave draws her back through the tunnels. She kicks her legs and paws fruitlessly at the stone, trying to get her moorings, working hard as hell not to be wrenched away by this gabbling, mind-wiped mutant. But it's no use. Instead of resisting, she decides to go with it. Like a swimmer, she pulls herself in the same direction the hut freak is dragging her. It gives her just enough momentum to overtake him and crash into him. They bowl over. She fights into position. He howls as she crunches an elbow into his trachea. The howl is cut short, stopped by a squeaky gurgle. Jazz doesn't stop and wait. It's time to move again. And so she does, finding an adjacent channel and wriggling through. Anytime she finds a new borehole, she takes it.
Just keep going. Don't stop. Don't vomit.
She'll find something. Some way out. Some way forward. Another sound halts her progress. This time, the sound isn't coming closer. It's distant. Someone yelling. It's him. It's Swift. She gets a small thrill from hearing the panic in his voice. She focuses on that sound, zeroing in on the direction. That's the way she heads now, through tunnels that corkscrew, where the hut slaves have carved mad icons of their mistress Nima. And then, from an adjoining tunnel, she feels it. A faint current of air. With it, a smell. Metal. Kesium. Ozone. The smell of a starship. That means a hangar bay or landing pad. A new sound arises, too. This sound is musical and discordant in equal measure. And now she knows she's close, because as they dragged her through Nima's temple, they pulled her through the hut's throne room, a cathedral-like area shot through with holes that hummed and howled like a wind instrument, like a musical organ formed of ancient stone. Whether that was designed intentionally, lunatic music to appease the slug, or is simply a natural effect, Jazz doesn't know and doesn't care. It means the way out. It means freedom. She follows the air and the strange music and starship stink that it brings. Ahead, a smooth borehole dropping down awaits. The bounty hunter drags herself along it on her belly. She peers through the space, and sure enough, there she sees the prize. A shuttle, by the looks of it. An older model Corellian ship. Flat, short wings. Big, tubby engine. At the fore hangs a blunt nose cone.
That's my way out.
One problem. It's got a guard. The rest of Swift's crew, whoever they are, don't seem to be here. They're probably off looking for her. Jazz isn't a gambler, but she'd bet credits that's what Swift was yelling about. One guard, though? She can handle it. From here, she spies the broad, rimmed hat of a Cayuso.
Familiar. Too familiar. It can't be.
As he turns, looking around the room, she spies his face and recognizes the bounty hunter who used to run with her aunt's crew.
Embo. It's him. Even now, she misses him sometimes.
He was quiet and spoke only in his native tongue. But she took the time as a child to learn his language. And as a result, they became close. Like family, in a way. John Burrell reminds her a bit of Embo. Silent, deadly, but sweet, too. Hard to get close to. But once you do, you see how good he can be. Of course, if this is really him, then what? Does he know he's here to hunt her? Does his loyalty side with the job or with her? And if he sides with the job, mercy. The Cayuso are capable fighters. Embo is older now, but if she had to lay credits down, she'd bet he hasn't lost a step. She must tread carefully. Jazz centers herself. She's still dizzy, but she'll have to push past. With a fluid, silent movement, she slips through the hole and hangs there, her fingers finding a narrow, smooth groove in the stone to help hold her. Her feet dangle. Below, Embo paces near the shuttle's ramp. He's a good way down, but she can handle the jump as long as she doesn't go straight to the ground. Instead, she swings herself forward and... Jazz is in midair, arms out, legs crouching as she lands atop the shuttle. Whoomp!
she lands as quietly as she can. But still, it makes a noise, even as she ducks and rolls. There's no time to waste as she quickly sidles forward, ducking behind one of the shuttle's fins and flattening herself against it. Footsteps. A grunt. Embo is looking.
If I can just sneak past him, this gets a whole lot easier.
Jazz whips down along the aft side, jumping from one engine booster to the next until she's on the ground and creeping up alongside the ship. Maybe, just maybe, if she can dart inside, Embo won't even see her. Then she can fire up the ship and...
A tall shape lurches into the space in front of her, perfectly silent. A bowcaster points at her. A crossbow big enough to take her head clean off her shoulders at this range. Embo has found her. Orange eyes glow in the dim half-dark of the temple hangar. His breastplate is scarred up. The gold, long since worn off. And the red Cayuso battle shirt is ragged at the hem.
Embo,
she says, startled. The bowcaster doesn't waver. He tilts his head and in his Cayuso tongue says...
Old friend, it is you.
She licks her lips, looking around. Embo could kill her. He could end it for her right now. He's gone up against bounty hunters, pirates, Jedi, Sith, and he's either triumphed or survived to fight another day. She swallows a hard lump and feels her palms sweat.
It's good to see you again, Embo. It's, been a while. Merrick around?
He passed away some years ago.
Merrick, Embo's pet Anuba. A vicious beast to Embo's enemies, but to her, the long-muzzled hound was ever the diligent cuddle bug, never failing to roll over and seize a belly-scratching opportunity as the young girl giggled.
I'm sorry to hear that. He was a good hound.
He was.
So, you're working with the crew again?
Her two hearts hammer inside her chest, beating so fast it's like cannon fire underneath the mantle of her breastbone.
If I move, he'll end me.
I always work with the crew. It is the Cayuso way to not be alone.
But swift, huh? I wouldn't have thought.
To that, Embo says nothing. He only shrugs. She asks,
You always know you were hunting me?
I did.
How's this going to end then, Embo?
From behind the bounty hunter, the faraway cry of another voice she recognizes. The blunt workman accent of another bounty hunter Sugi worked with once upon a time. Dengar. His presence here is a surprise. Swift is really bringing the history with this crew. Sugi always hated Dengar. Everybody always hated Dengar. Of course, they hate Swift, too.
Back to the ship! She came this way!
Dengar says. She can't see that old salt. Not yet. But he'll be here soon.
Come on, come on, come on. Embo,
she says.
I know you have debts. You and Sugi, you two helped people. You did the right thing, and I know that upset the wrong people. It cost you. I have her debts too.
She realizes now the deal for the Cayuso is probably simple. Embo's slate will be wiped clean if he brings in Jazz. Debt for debt, credit for credit. She starts to hear Dengar now, closing in.
Sugi always did what was right, even though she didn't admit it. And you were loyal to her. I'm trying to do something good here, too. The right thing. Even if it's not the easy thing. Even if it makes the wrong people mad. Even if it costs me. So, I need you to not bring me in. And I need that ship.
Embo seems to consider this.
I am old,
he says.
And Merrick always liked you.
He lifts the bowcaster and steps away from the ship. Her path is clear. She lets out a breath.
I won't forget this, Embo.
As you say, child.
She wants to do more. Even just stand here and talk to him. She regrets suddenly having lost touch with him all these years. But there's no time for that. Already as she runs toward the ramp, she spies that old bastard Dengar trotting up, his long-barreled rifle swung up by his hip.
Jace, don't you dare run!
His cannon rifle goes off. She winces as a bolt shrieks over her shoulder. Nearly falling, she manages to hurry up the ramp, slamming the button closed behind her. It begins to ascend as she dives into the cockpit, opens the gunnery panel, and sets the shuttle's nose cone turret to drop. As she warms the engines, the turret begins barking fire through the hangar. Dengar dives behind a rock formation just as the turret blasts a small crater where he was standing only moments before. Time to get out of here. Time to find Nora.